You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
No, it's not.
It's not? What is it?
It's something else. The podcast where I gaslight you.
Oh. It's got the same theme song. Today we'll be talking about the first serial of the 26th and final season of Doctor Who, Battlefield, which consists of four episodes that aired from September 6th, 1989 to September 27th, 1989. And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. And joining us today, we were going to have two guests, but one of them couldn't make it. But our other guest is here, good old reliable Nathan Laws.
Hey, Joe and Tony, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. How's it going with you?
Yeah.
I'm doing okay. Had a little bit of a hectic time getting ready, but I got ready. I have my notes, so everything's good.
Yeah, did you manage to rewatch the episodes and everything?
Yeah.
I did not watch Willow. You told me to watch Willow. I did not watch Willow.
You didn't do your homework. Oh, that's so bad. Tony, have you seen Willow?
No.
Oh my God.
What is Willow?
Oh my God.
It's a fantasy film with Val Kilmer and Warwick Davis.
No, all right. Tony, have you seen Star Wars?
I've heard of the Star Wars.
I can't confirm Tony has seen Star Wars. Whether Tony remembers Star Wars,
oh, okay.
Who knows?
Have you seen Indiana Jones?
I've seen some Indiana Jones movies.
It's more excusable from Tony because it sounds like she's not into like George Lucas stuff. But like, Joe, you've seen Star Wars and Indiana Jones. Have you not seen Willow? I just don't understand.
I used to get Legend and Willow mixed up all the time because they're both just like fantasy movies from the 80s.
I've never seen this before in my life.
So different. Oh God, those movies are so different.
But I used to get them mixed up, and then I didn't see either of them, and then I finally saw Legend, and I did not like it. I did not like that movie at all, other than the fact that Tim Curry looks rad in it. But other than that, I was like, this is a terrible movie. And then I just never bothered watching Willow.
They have nothing to do with each other. At all.
I'm sure they don't, but my teenage self was like, no, thank you. But apparently it has something to do with Battlefield, yeah.
I'll explain when we get there, but yeah, I'll explain why I bring up Willow, but yeah.
I know there's a new Who episode that's probably got Willow connections because Warwick Davis is in an episode of New Who, but that's all I got. That's the only thing I know. I know Willow's coming back. They're doing a new thing.
Right, yeah, there's going to be a series on Disney Plus.
I'll watch it at some point, and then I'll be like, oh, Battlefield, I get it now. So, how you been doing, by the way? What's going on? Anything new in your world?
I started a new job in October, but I've been on the show since then. I don't think I brought that up, but, I mean, it's just, I was bored at my old job. I mean, it's the same company. I'm just, like, basically moved departments just because I was like, I am so bored doing the same thing for 7 years. But, yeah, otherwise, I mean, I guess somewhat appropriately to this show, I interviewed Sadie Miller, who is the daughter of Elizabeth Sladen, who played Sarah Jane. So, yeah, I talked with her because she's now doing Sarah Jane in the Big Finish stuff. So, yeah, I talked to her about that, talked to her about her mom. So that was kind of cool. So
you said you've been doing the same job for 7 years and getting bored of it. So we've been doing this podcast for 7 years.
Interesting.
Has it actually been 7 years?
It sure has.
Oh, my God. I mean, I know I came to you guys late. You know, like, you guys have been doing the show for a while, but I didn't realize it was 7 years at this point.
Our seven-year anniversary of our first episode is March 4th, which is also my birthday. When we're recording this, we haven't hit our seventh anniversary yet, but we were recording before my birthday, so it still counts. We've been doing it for 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
We started off Our first episode we recorded on the bedroom floor of our old apartment. Not even our old apartment, our old apartment.
Because we lived in two different apartments in the same building.
We were on the third floor, then we moved to the first floor because a room opened up and we were like, we hate carrying groceries upstairs.
Yeah, you guys didn't even have a theme song for that first episode.
No, I think we just made one up. I think we just went, doo doo.
Yeah, you just like sang some stuff.
Da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Yeah, it was bad. And then we almost set our house on fire.
A couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Enough so that it made it into the actual theme song. So we're in the last season of Classic Who. We gotta, like, you know, do some reminiscing. Since we're talking about it, let's dive into the final season, the first episode of Battlefield. Episode 1, which I have called Night Fight.
I said A Hard Day's Night.
Ah, we both went for the night pun.
Yeah.
You went for night night and I went for knife night. Tony, what do you got?
My title is Kevin.
Kevin?
I've named it Kevin.
There's not even a person named Kevin in this episode.
No, it's just the name of the episode.
It's like one of those fake titles they use when they're filming a movie to throw you off the scent, like Blue Harvest or whatever.
Sure. I mean, it's Kevin.
It's Kevin.
I know Kevin.
All right. Episode 1, Kevin. So the first thing we see right out of the bat is that we have a returning character. We see a retired brigadier and his wife, Doris, doing some gardening.
Am I supposed to know Doris?
All right. So in Planet of Spiders, which was the last story, one of the plot elements is that the doctor is interested in this person who has psychic powers. He can touch an object and tell things about it. So the doctor has the brigadier give him his watch. And the guy starts going on this story about this watch was given to you by a woman. Her name is Doris, you spent a night together, and the brigadier was like, stop, and he grabs it away. So, like, you know, apparently there was some racy story connected with, you know, Doris, so that's the reference they're going for.
Huh, all right. The doctor says something like, she
finally caught you.
Yeah, and it's like, did she? Who is this?
Yeah, it's so obscure, I would have never gotten it either, except that I've read other people who talk about it, and it's like, oh, I do remember that, so, yeah.
What a deep pull for a reference. I guess, I know the writer apparently rewatched, like, a lot of Brig episodes before writing this serial, so that may be why he was like, oh, that's probably a thing, I'll just throw that in, and everyone will know what I'm talking about. But after we meet, we're reintroduced to the old brigadier. Then we meet a new brigadier whose name is Winifred Bambera.
I really like now that they're depicting UNIT as multinational, because it always seemed weird that they're the United Nations Intelligence Task Force, but it seemed like everyone was British.
I think they specifically were like, we should make this international in a way that it has not been. It feels like what we're doing now with the doctor we did with the Brig in the 80s, which is, we got a black lady as the Brig now. That's pretty cool. It's paving the way for the doctor. That's what it's doing. But they're somewhere investigating something.
Great.
Yeah, this new unit.
Great recapping.
They're at a lake. They're at a lake, and their communications are all not great, which they assume is due to the weather, but I believe is because of this blinking sword that we see that's just inside of this, we will later learn is a spaceship sort of deal.
That happens sometimes.
You just get a blinking sword
mm-hmm.
in a spaceship
mm-hmm.
in a lake. And then we see crystal ball as well that has a woman appear on it. And that is Morgaine from, you know, Arthurian legend. And she is played by, I'm blanking on her name, but I'm sure Nathan knows.
Jean Marsh.
There you go.
I was going to say, why did you start the sentence without any idea of where it was going?
Because I knew Nathan would know. She's been on Doctor Who twice before.
She was the Princess Joanna, who was the sister of King Richard in The Crusade.
And she was also, more famously, Sarah Kingdom in, was it Dalek's Master Plan?
Yeah.
And which... In that serial, her brother, who she murdered, was played by Nicholas Courtney, the Brigadier.
So it's a reunion.
Yeah.
But the reason, so this is the reason why I bring up Willow. So in America, she's best known for being Bav Morda from Willow, who is an evil, like, queen with, you know, magical powers and stuff. And so the and Willow came out the year before this. So it's, you know, it's a very similar performance between the two characters. And so it's kind of hard not to watch this and think of Willow if you've seen Willow.
I'm going to watch Willow and think of her in this, so.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to be, like, one of the very few people who has that reaction to it.
I'm probably not going to watch Willow.
What if it's really good, though?
I'll think about it.
Okay, I'll watch it, and then if I like it and think you'll like it, I'll make you watch it.
That sounds right.
I'm your, like, I don't know. I'm like the guy that tastes the king's food to make sure it's not poisoned. Except I do that with media. And you are my king. That's what I'm saying.
Like, Willow is what I describe as an everything movie. So, like, for me, it's like Star Wars, Willow, and The Princess Bride. Because they've got action, comedy, romance, you know, all of it, like, together. And so it's like, those movies were always, like, the movies that were on constant rotation for me. Yeah, that's why I just... Because I know you guys are younger than me, but I don't think you're that much. Like, you know, like, no more than 10 years, right? So... It's like Willow would have come out just as you guys were born, so I'm shocked that it wasn't like something you watched as kids growing up. So
Tony didn't see Princess Bride until...
I did not.
Like, right when we started dating, so. And that was one of the ones that I was like, you'll like this. And then Tony watched it, and I was like, oh, so every single line in this movie is quotable. Got it.
Your friends all told you to break up with me.
That's true. I was in Cincinnati hanging out with a group of members of a forum I was a part of, the Douglas Adams Continuum. Tony was in St. Louis, and like we were texting each other. We had just started dating. And then Tony was like, people are wanting to watch this movie called The Princess Bride, and I've never seen it. And I told this to everyone, and they were all immediately like, dumper. And they just... All at once.
No. You don't dump somebody for not having seen it. You dump them if they watch it and don't like it. If they're like, oh god, this is trash. Then it's like, oh no, we can't.
Luckily, Tony did enjoy The Princess Bride. So.
Yeah, I had to.
Yeah. It is a perfect movie. It is a really good movie. But back in Doctor Who, we've met the Brigadier. We've re-met Sarah Kingdom. There's a lot of bringing things back. And now we say goodbye to something. We're inside the TARDIS, and I believe this is the last time we see the interior of the TARDIS on the show.
Yes, and in fact, the background wall is like a fake. Like, they dummied up something because, like, the sets had been damaged in storage, and they just didn't want to spend the money to create a new set. So the console was fine, but they didn't really have a set, so they dummied up. That's why you only get, like, one angle shot, because they only had, like, a certain amount of, like of a fake wall that they just made up, like, really quick, so that they, you know, that you would see it in the background.
And that, I assume that's also why it's, like, kind of dark, and they're,
right.
They say it's, like, the power went out, but I'm sure that's also just, like, we gotta cover up that this looks bad.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, but it's, yeah, sadly, it's the last time we see the interior of the TARDIS in the classic series.
Aw, sad. But the Doctor picks up a distress call that is saying, Merlin, Merlin.
To be fair, it's more like, Merlin.
It's just, they're picking up broadcasts from the BBC way in the future. I don't want to get into it too much, but Tony made me watch Merlin, and it's bad.
To be fair. I told you beforehand that it was bad.
Yeah. And you hadn't finished the series and you wanted to finish the series. And the worst stuff happens at the very end.
Right. The very worst stuff I was unaware of.
Don't watch Merlin.
Yeah, I've never seen Merlin.
It's got great characters, a great cast.
It's got a cast that is well above its script. And so it's a very frustrating watch because you're like, this could have been so great. In fact, it frequently is great.
The writers are bad.
Yeah.
The writers are very bad. They don't know how to structure things. And then they set up things. And then they just completely fail to pay anything off. It's bad. Anyway, that's our little mini review of Merlin. So the Doctor and Ace hitchhike and are picked up by a guy named Peter Wormsley, who is supervising an archaeology dig. And also, apparently, this guy didn't like the lines he was given or didn't feel like he got enough lines. So just started adding in new lines that he was just quoting from a poet.
From Tennyson. So Tennyson wrote Idylls of the King, which is, I think it's a collection of writings, but basically it's all about the Arthurian myth. So, I mean, he's quoting from Tennyson.
It's relevant quoting, but it's still just quoting. Some of it makes its way into the episode. Some of it gets cut. And then we have a bad-looking special effect of something flying towards the Earth, but then a decent effect of it actually crashing into the Earth and exploding. And out of this crash rises a knight in armor. Just a medieval knight. Apparently in the original, in the script, it was supposed to be sort of have some sort of like sci-fi elements to it.
Well, I mean, he does have the gun in one hand, like the laser gun. So, I mean, that's sort of the nod to that. But yeah, that's the only thing that makes him look not like a typical medieval knight.
Yeah, just a knight with a gun. And also why we've titled this episode after knights. Like, throughout this episode, like, multiple of these knights crash, and they're sort of running around chasing each other, and we don't quite know who they are and who's on what side or any of that. We just see them shooting at each other and fighting each other with swords and whatnot.
Yeah, and see, since I'm such a big fan of, like, fantasy and sort of historical fiction and all that kind of stuff, like, the idea of, like, sci-fi knights and you know, swords and you know, guns and all that, like, that's interesting to me. I like that. I think it's a cool notion, so I really like that.
Yeah, it's fun. The sword fights are pretty decent, too, I feel like. I mean, they're no Princess Bride, but what is?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, we're dealing with a TV budget here.
So the Doctor and Ace are dropped off, and they're tracking the distress signal to a missile convoy.
The Doctor's like, it's this way, and you know, he's pointing his detector in one direction, and Ace is like, he spins him around to face where the convoy is, because she can just see it, and then suddenly starts beeping louder, you know? So I thought that was really funny.
They're such a good team. I love Ace and the Doctor, the Seventh Doctor. The Doctor recognizes that it's UNIT and starts digging through his pockets, doing the classic pocket gag.
Always good.
And he gives Ace some identification, some UNIT identification. And she's like, who's Elizabeth Shaw?
I know who that is.
You do. He's like, don't worry about it. You look close enough. Just go. And they try to sort of infiltrate this UNIT base, but are pretty much immediately like, Bambera is like, I don't know who you are, but I'm not going to let you just walk around this base.
Well, because the picture, it's a picture of the Third Doctor and Liz. So, I mean, like, it's like you aren't these people on these photos.
And she sort of kicks them out. And the Doctor's like, I have three things to say. Yeti, Autons, Daleks, Cybermen and Silurians. And they still just push him out.
Much
and
then, more than three.
Yeah. Ace even is like, that was five things. And he's like, well, they didn't even listen to that, so. But another UNIT soldier sort of comes up to Bambera and is like, I know you're above me, but I've heard about this Doctor, and he has different faces. I don't know. It's some weird British TV show.
But yeah, that's it's kind of interesting because now, like, the Doctor is sort of becoming, like, lore for, like, UNIT troops. If it's like, you know, there's this mysterious guy that helps out, he changes his appearance and his personality, but he's still the same guy. And so I kind of like that. Like, that's something that they play with this, and then with the novels that come after the Seventh Doctor's era, they start playing with that a lot more, of sort of like the idea of the Doctor. Of course, the new series, you know, takes that, but like, I kind of like that idea of he's becoming almost a legend now.
He is a legend. We learned that in The Greatest Show on Earth. We cut back to the Brigadier, and like, there's just a lot of padding with the Brigadier, because this episode was supposed to, or this serial was supposed to be three episodes, and they expanded it into four, and I feel like a lot of that expansion is just the Brigadier just kind of doing nothing for like the entire first episode.
You just shut your mouth. I'm so happy to see him on screen that it's fine. It's fine.
He's in a helicopter for a whole day.
He literally naps at one point.
Right, he lands, but we don't see that part. Like, they skip the landing and him going to meetings and stuff, and then he's back in the helicopter, so we just skip through all that.
He's initially not going to answer the, you know, call to adventure. He's like, I'm gardening. I'm retired. Leave me alone. And then his wife is like, they said something about the doctor. And he's like, oh, well, I guess I gotta go. Puts on the old suit and everything. Meanwhile, the new brigadier, Bambera, drives Ace and the doctor after she's like, I guess I have to deal with you guys because you're some sort of weird legend. Drives them to this place called the Gore Crow Hotel, which is a fantastic name. I love Gore Crow Hotel. Apparently one of the actors, I don't remember which one, thought it was a real hotel. It wasn't, but just like went in and crashed on like one of the beds, just assuming that it was a real hotel.
I think it was the one who played the archaeologist.
Oh, that sounds like that guy.
Because he was a big name, apparently, in England.
Oh. And
yeah, like everybody on the, like on the extras they have on the DVDs talked about him. Like he was like, oh wow, it was him. And you know, if he wants to just add lines, he can do that, and you know, like stuff like that. So.
If he wants to just crash in some person's bed, let him.
Yeah.
And when they get to the hotel, we meet a new character. I am going to mispronounce her name. I just know it. Xiao Ying? She's pretty cool. They go in. Ace attempts to order some alcohol, and the doctor doesn't let her. And her and Ace basically start just talking about explosives, and it's adorable.
It's so good. It's so good that there's another character who's like, ah, yes, I know about explosives. This is teenage bonding.
And also when the doctor pays for the drinks, he just pulls out a whole bunch of different, like, type of money, including one that's just like a little robotic bug-looking thing.
Yeah, you know, they've done that gag before, but it's always just been like an assortment of weird-looking coins and stuff. But this is the first time they've had, like, something that moves. And I thought that made it, like, that added a little extra gag to it that, you know, was funny.
I feel like that would be inconvenient to actually have as money.
Right, and the guy, the bartender, goes to pick it up just to look at it, and the doctor's like, do you mind? That's a, you know, really valuable piece of coinage.
Then the doctor goes and examines the scabbard on the wall and talks to, I guess, the owner of the hotel's wife, who is blind. She's like, that scabbard gives off some weird energy.
Bad vibes.
It's hot sometimes, it's cold sometimes. And apparently it's also the only thing of any value that has been found in the archaeology dig that Wormsley has been doing. Which reminds me a lot of, I just did an article for Looper about this show called The Curse of Oak Island, where they dig for treasure. And I had to list every piece of treasure they found, which is mostly just like coins and buttons and just a lot of dirt. That show's been on for like 10 seasons and all they found is dirt and buttons.
Yeah, you get the impression, because they say that he's been working that site for 10 years, that somebody found the scabbard and he's like, oh, there's gotta be stuff here, and he's just been working for 10 years to find something else. You know, like anything else of any value there.
And nowadays he would have his own reality show. 10 seasons on the History Channel. Peter Wormsley digs it up. Yeah, Bambera stumbles into a knight fight outside of the TARDIS. Sort of gets mixed up in the middle of it. Then we cut. Okay, so there's more explosive bonding between Ace and Xiao that I love this scene so much. I feel like it's the first time we've ever really seen anything like this on Doctor Who. Because Ace is telling a story to Xiao about basically one of the times she blew up her school. And as she's talking, it's intercutting with the knight fight. And, like, a grenade rolls, and then, like, at the point that she's like, and then it went, boom! She, like, slams her fist on the table and goes, boom! And the grenade explodes. And I feel like that's the first time we've ever seen that sort of, like, intercutting on this show. I could be wrong, but I feel like it is. Where what she's saying sort of mirrors what's happening in the other plot.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's kind of, like, I feel like it's a scene that doesn't work all that well. Because, like, the way they show the knight flying looks so, like, goofy.
Yeah.
And they're doing that boom, boom. Like, it just seems like way over the top.
And it's sponsored by Pepsi.
Yeah. Because they're outdoors and there's one of those umbrellas, you know, over the table, you know, the outdoor eating area. And yeah, it's a Pepsi umbrella.
Just a big old Pepsi logo. I like the boom, them saying boom, but yes, the effect does look really bad. They don't connect the explosion with the knight flying. They don't connect them well at all.
Well, yeah, because the knight flying looks like somebody off camera is lifting him up, which is probably what was actually happening. You know, it doesn't look like he's flying from an explosion.
I feel like he jumped down into shot and they reversed it. That's the kind of vibe I got.
And that could have been that might be the other, yeah, what happened. But either way, it doesn't look right.
No, and then they cut to like a wide shot of like a building with a hole in the top of it and smoke coming out. And it's like clearly been done in post. But they go to go see what landed in this building. Wake up. It's one of the knights. They take off his mask and he wakes up. This guy's name is Ancelin and he calls the doctor Merlin.
Ancelin is amazing. I absolutely love him.
I actually knew who this guy was. He's one of the few guest stars on this show that I'm like, oh, I know that guy. I believe he played King Arthur in Army of Darkness, the third Evil Dead movie. So he's got a little bit of a typecasting thing going on, I guess.
The part that I found was weird there when at first they're like, is it a robot? And the doctor, like, gingerly, like, touches the armor, and he's like, no, it's human. And I'm like, how can you tell by touching armor that it's human?
Also, the fact that it looks like a medieval knight does not lend one to think that it's a robot.
We have seen a robotic medieval knight in Doctor Who before, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. It just swung a sword.
That's right.
I loved that thing. But then Bambera shows up and pulls a gun on everyone and's like, stop. And then more knights come in, and then there's sort of like a, you know, standoff with knights and guns and swords. And that's the cliffhanger. That's the end of episode one. And we are now into episode two, which I've called, It's a Trap!
I said it's a kind of magic.
Wow, our titles are weirdly similar. So I guess the Doctor's Merlin. How do you feel about that?
I knew that.
You knew that? How do you feel about it, though?
Makes sense. It just tracks.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is how the Doctor is Merlin, because it's not like... Battlefield's kind of interesting, because through this whole era of Doctor Who, these last two seasons, it's like there's certain things that they were trying to do, like the Doctor has all these things in his past that we don't know about, and, you know, the Doctor's more proactive, but Battlefield's kind of the one where they turn all that on its head. It's like, the Doctor isn't proactive in Battlefield, things are happening that he's not prepared for, and also it's not dealing with stuff from his past that we didn't know about. It's dealing with stuff from his future, you know, and stuff like that. And I kind of like that it's, you know, playing with a totally different, you know, way of doing, like, who can manipulate the Doctor who we've seen to be, like, the one who, like, stages events and manipulates people? Well, why not a further Doctor, you know, can manipulate him? So I thought that was interesting.
Who has the line in New Who about, I hate wizards and stories? Is that a River line?
I think it's a River song, yeah.
Because they always turn out to be the Doctor. I kept thinking about that when watching this.
It does sort of feel like, yeah, like the opposite of Remembrance. Where, yeah, like where Remembrance is, he set everything up. And in this one, it's like, he set everything up, but it's in his future, so he doesn't know what it is. At the beginning of this episode, we see that the leader of the other knights is revealed to be Mordred, son of Morgaine, who is another Arthurian legend. And he also recognizes Merlin. And the Doctor just sort of leans into it and is like, yeah, I'm Merlin and I'm big and scary and be terrified of my mighty arts.
Go or I'll unleash a terrible something on you.
Nice and vague.
Yes, I know.
You gotta keep your threats weirdly vague.
But it's all in the delivery. It's so vague in what he's saying, but he's so intense in how he does it. I'll unleash a terrible something on you. You know, like, it's very intense.
I feel like he's definitely amped up his performance. Because he does some more stuff later on that's also very like, whoa, all right, you're getting intense there, buddy.
Yeah, because I think there already was some dialogue with Ancelin where the Doctor said, like, do you recognize me? And he said, no, like, I don't recognize you, but I can tell from how you're acting that you are. And he says, like, you know, you have the ship of time that's bigger inside than outside and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, so we get that Anselin knows things about the Doctor and knows, like, that he can even change his face and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this is also, like, not the first time I feel like that we've had characters who are like, you're the Doctor, even though you've changed. And it's just like, there's just something, like an aura about him. They're like, yeah, that's the Doctor. We know who that is. Like, I feel like the Cybermen did it as well, and there's been other characters. So there's just like something, I feel like there's just some sort of vibe he gives off that just clues people into who he is.
Well, I also feel like, again, the series is becoming more intelligent in its writing, and they're realizing that we don't have to go through long things of the Doctor proving that who he is to people that happened in the early ones every time he regenerated, where it's like, let's write characters who are smart enough to figure it out, because it's like, even though the Doctor changes, he still, you know, in some ways acts the same. He still talks about the same kind of stuff. He still is the TARDIS. You know, people can put this together on their own.
I mean, even the Brig, when he finally meets the Doctor, is like, he knows that it's the Doctor. I mean, sure, he's been told the Doctor is here somewhere. Even still, he's like, yeah, it's this guy in the weird costume. He's got question marks all over him, for Pete's sake. Oh, there's a scene that I love that was, the choreography for this was improvised by the actors. They've, like, settled everything. The knights have gone away. And Bambera and Anselin are sort of just, like, talking to each other. And she's like, who are you? And blah, blah, blah. And then they just start fighting as the Doctor and Ace and Shao, like, sort of walk in the foreground. And they're just, like, full-on tumbling in the background. And the Doctor's like, oh, they're just establishing their credentials.
All right, I have to say, I absolutely love Anselin Bambera. I just think it's the cutest relationship. For me, it's like, there's Ian and Barbara, and then there's Anselin and Bambera. Those are my Doctor Who, like, couples.
It took so little for me to be 1,000% invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that it's almost like, it's like an inverse of the trope, because usually the trope is there's the tough warrior woman who, once she's bested by a man, is then just like, oh, you're the man for me. And in this case, it's Anselin Bambera kicks his ass. And then he's like totally into her, like, ever since, like, from that moment on. And I'm like, that's so cool. I love that they sort of like turned that trope on its head.
It makes me think of, what's the Dimension 20? Crown of Candy, Murph's character.
Oh, yeah.
And Crown of Candy has a similar dynamic with another character.
The two guards?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like this big, strong guard guy, and then he just becomes very submissive. Like, incredibly submissive. It's very, very good. Mordred begins a ritual to merge two realities, because I guess Morgaine's in a sort of side pocket universe.
They're kind of like a parallel dimension.
Yeah, they all come from a parallel universe, all these knights and everything.
There's these two globes next to them that I guess represent the universes. The crystal balls light up and there's smoke and it's all very atmospheric, and he's having a good time hamming it up a little bit.
He is so hammy, and it's great though, because he's just enjoying it. He's doing his evil laugh and everything, and I'm just like, it's a choice, definitely, but I love that, like, they're just completely going for, we're gonna, like, just play this like we are, like, the arch-villains and do, like, I am Mordred.
Like, the camera swings in like it's on a crane or something. It's great. And while he's doing this, the scabbard on the wall in the hotel starts to shake and then flies across the room and almost hits Wormsley, sort of embeds in a post. And then all of, like, the glasses on the shelf, the beer glasses behind the bar, just start falling down. I feel like there's multiple shots of just glasses in the bar breaking. And I was just very worried that nobody would be able to drink anything. I hope that place is insured. But the Doctor grabs the scabbard and is, like, wrestling with it, trying to stop whatever is happening from happening, which is Morgaine basically crossing over. And she does, and she sort of can talk to the Doctor, I guess, through the scabbard or just magic. I don't know. And she's, like, warning him not to interfere. And then the whole hotel goes dark. And then, like, a weird sort of time jump happens.
It's the next morning.
Yeah, I feel like that loses a little bit of urgency to the plot a little bit, that they're all like, oh, this stuff has happened. Anyway, we should get some sleep. Though it does lead to something very cute, which is the next morning, the doctor is going around cleaning up the yard. He's just picking up all of the swords and the guns and the weapons. And he goes in, back into the hotel, and Anselin and Bambera have fallen asleep, like, leaning on top of each other. Like, their heads are resting against each other, and it's very cute. And then the doctor wakes them up by grabbing an empty chip bag, blowing it up, and then popping it. That's not something you want to do around someone who carries a gun.
I love it because it showed, like, the scene goes for a little bit where he's, like, sneaking around the room, putting things away, being very, very quiet. But then when he's done with that, he takes the chip bag and he blows it. Of course, you see it coming. You know what's going to happen. It's just really funny. Because they, like, jump up, like, where's the fight, you know? It's like, there's nothing.
We almost got Paul McGann so much sooner. So the doctor and Ace and Wormsley all go out to the dig site and they find a carving in the thing. He's like, yeah, we've been trying to translate that forever. We can't figure it out. And the doctor just like says, it says dig hole here. And he's like, how do you know that? And he's like, it's in my handwriting. And so the doctor's like, Ace, do you have any Nitro 9? And she's like, sure do. And plugs it in there. And then it's, you know, every time she uses it, she uses too much. And the doctor has to get on to her. Like, one of these days we're going to have a talk about safety protocols.
Which, one, is very funny, because it's something that happens later. Two, it's the timer. It's not that it was too much. It's that the timer was too short.
Yes. But they basically blow open a entranceway, a tunnel.
I'm with Ace on archaeology. Like real archaeology takes way too long and would be really tedious, and I would probably lose my mind if I was trying to do that. So just blow it up. See what comes out.
I had to go through the highlights of 10 seasons of The Curse of Oak Island. So it is tedious and awful, even when you're just doing the highlights.
Could you imagine editing that show?
No.
I think about the same way you think about, like, fishing shows.
Like the Brian Regan bit?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to imagine it's worse, though.
It's so repetitive and boring. It's awful. This is the podcast about Curse of Oak Island. So, yes, throughout this whole episode is when the brig has been sort of going around in a helicopter, not really doing much, literally napping. He wakes up when the magic ritual happens. But at this point, Morgaine and Mordred see the Brigadier arriving in his helicopter, and Morgaine shoots it with some electricity from her fingertips, and it takes the helicopter down. The brig is fine, though, but the pilot hurts her leg. So he goes off to, like, see what he can do, and he's very excited. He's like, this is turning out to be pretty fun. Cocks his gun and is ready to go. The doctor and Ace go inside the tunnel and tell Wormsley to keep watch and distract anyone that tries to come in, which is when he starts quoting Tennyson at people. That's his distraction, as he's like, just starts quoting Tennyson, and everyone's like, what is he doing? But they go into the tunnel, and then it like collapses in behind them, and Ace is worried, but the doctor says, don't worry, Ace, it's only a trap.
Good line, great delivery.
And then we start getting sort of like this interesting characterization of Morgaine. Sort of starts here, because so far she's just been a typical villain. Her and Mordred find like a monument or a memorial or something, like to, I guess, dead soldiers. And she's like, you've led us here to this place where, you know, people are honoring their dead. And you told me they were like, not like this. And we shouldn't be here, you know, fighting on this sort of sacred ground and whatnot. And it's not what you told me it was going to be. That's when the Brigadier shows up and...
I love this scene.
He pulls a gun on her immediately, and then she's sort of like, we're doing this, like, memorial ritual thing for the dead. We gotta clear the air or whatever. And she's like, so I'm gonna let you go and everything, but the next time I see you, I will kill you.
I like the way that she says it, though, because what she says is, like, I don't have any ill will towards you. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that. But the next time I see you, I will kill you. And the Brigadier's like, fair.
Right.
And then they leave, and it's like, that's great. That's an interaction between two highly specific people.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it starts even though when the Brigadier comes up, because at first she's just like, oh, warrior, and she's like already like sort of like, oh, this, you know, respectful, you know, he's this warrior. And once the Brigadier finds out that she you know, is like, no, I don't want to fight right now. He's like, oh, what can I do to help? And it's just like this thing where they're both like, all right, I'll respect your beliefs and we'll do this. And oh, okay, but afterward, we're going to fight and you're going to kill me. All right, that's fine. Let's do this.
She says the next time she sees him, she'll kill him. But the last time she saw him, she killed him too.
Well, I'm thinking because the next time chronologically is in the future. That's the Dalek's master plan. So that's when she kills him.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. But the Doctor and Ace find this weird fish door. Like it's got teeth. And I think even Ace says something about it seems fishy.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's like giggles at it and says this is no time for humor. But like it's still laughing at it. They don't know how to get it open. And so the Doctor just goes, basically it's just like, hey, door, open. And then it does because... it's his door. Like, it's voice activated by his voice. Maybe he is or will be in the future or past Merlin.
He says, you know, Merlin made this. And she said, but everybody thinks you're Merlin. And he said, and he says, I'm not, but I might be, you know, so.
In my future, but the past. And they go in. We also quickly see that the Brigadier arrives at the hotel and sort of commandeers Shao's car. But she goes with him. Then in a deleted scene, because I read the transcripts and it includes the deleted scenes, which is very helpful. The Doctor explains that the ship that they're going in is organic. The stuff was all grown by magic / technology. And he says the whole thing about like any advanced piece of technology is indistinguishable from magic and also reverses that. So,
yeah, I'm going to say now just for people who are listening that so the VHS version had sort of like a director's cut, which is probably where the transcripts are coming from that had deleted scenes in there. The DVD release, I don't like it as much because a lot of the DVD releases, they did the director's cuts, but then they also added even more scenes, which were like completely unnecessary. And they also changed the effects, which I don't like at all.
I don't like that either.
And they basically edited them together as a movie, whereas the VHS was still episodic. It just had some extra scenes in it. I prefer the VHS version of this, and actually the Blu-rays are nice because the Blu-rays give you all three choices. You can either watch it the way it was televised, you can watch the VHS version, or you can watch the DVD version. So my preferred is the VHS.
We watched the
they always want to watch it the way it was televised first.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point.
We accidentally watched, was it Kinda?
Yeah, it was Kinda.
And it had the, like, new snake effects, and I hated it. Not just, I mean, honestly, the effects were pretty good. I just hated seeing a snake.
Well, I will say the VHS version doesn't add any effects. It just has a few more scenes.
Oh, well, that's good. So the Doctor and Ace find in the center of this ship, there's just a dead guy there in the center with a sword.
That happens sometimes.
Well, they think that he's just sleeping.
Think he's in stasis. And they think that he's probably Arthur.
Yeah, because the Arthurian legend is that Arthur didn't actually die. He was taken away to Avalon, where he'll sleep until England needs him.
I feel like there's been plenty of opportunities for that fucker to come back. But Ace is just sort of joking around and pulls the sword out.
I like what she says. She's like, what? I'm not...
the King of England.
Yeah, she's like, it'll be fine, and then immediately pulls it out.
Which triggers a special effects snake. It's like a security system thing.
Yeah, like, it's so weird as a defense mechanism, because it's this weird energy that looks like a snake. But all it does is basically just seem to knock people around. It doesn't, like, really hurt them in any, like, substantial way.
I would love to have security ghosts.
What if it's a security ghost snake, though? Is that cool?
I mean, snakes are cool. I might go for something else.
What would be your security ghost?
Some kind of like a big cat, a tiger.
Oh, yeah.
A lion. You know what? A
tabby.
A moose.
A moose?
Those fuckers are huge.
They are. They're really big. Yeah.
A ghost moose?
A goose, if you will.
A goose? That would freak the shit out of people. Nobody's fucking with that.
I agree. Well, get on that technology, Tony.
All right.
Make it happen. I'm going to write a goosed movie now. Okay. So,
very goosty movie.
You say that the snake doesn't seem dangerous, but the next thing that happened was actually dangerous.
Right.
The Doctor tells Ace to run, and she just runs into, like, a booth.
She runs into a booth and then goes, it's a dead end, and then stands there.
Right, it's like, yeah, so there's two problems there. One, how did you not see that it was a dead end? And two, once you're in there, why don't you jump out? So she waits for, like, the door to close, and it's like she had plenty of time to get out of there once she saw that it was a dead end. It's like, oh my god.
And then it begins filling up with water, and they did not build this correctly. They were not prepared for the weight of the water. And it, the safety glass cracked. Sylvester McCoy saw this happening and just yelled an expletive. I think he yelled shit. Because he was like, I gotta warn them, but I don't want them to think I'm doing something in character. So I'm going to curse so they know that I'm being for real so that they will
listen.
And he's like, get her out of the thing.
Right, because the fear is if the water, like, started leaking out, it would hit, because, you know, they have cables all over the floor out of shot for, like, the cameras and stuff. Like, it was an electrocution hazard. As well, I mean, there's also a hazard, potentially, if she, like, fell through it, but that's less likely, you know, like, the electricity would probably happen first, because the cracks would start small. But in the shot that they use for when she comes out, I think that might be in the next episode, but when she comes out, that's the actual shot of them grabbing her and lifting her up because they didn't try to redo the, you know, the scene. And you can see that the glass is cracked if you're paying attention.
Yeah, they actually, I think they include the shot where the glass actually cracks too, because, I mean, if you have that footage, use it.
Well, yeah, they were limited just because they weren't going to, like, remount it after that. So, I mean, it's kind of like you had to use the take.
And I think she did cut herself a little bit, but she was fine.
Yeah, she got a cut on her hand from when they pulled her out.
Yeah, the fact that this serial has a line about
safety protocols.
Safety protocols.
Yeah, actually, it turned, like, they started using that footage in, like, a BBC training, like, safety training video. As an example, I guess, of what not to do. Like, hey, maybe you should actually check that your stuff can take the water pressure before you put an actor in there.
Oh, man, you don't want to be in the PSA for, like, what not to do. That's bad. But the tank filling up with water is the cliffhanger for episode 2, which means we're now into episode 3, which I've called The Two Briggs.
I called it United We Stand, with unit capitalized.
Nice.
So this one's Daryl.
What was episode 2? I didn't ask. We had Kevin, then
episode 2 was Sven.
Sven. Okay, and this one is Daryl.
Daryl.
All right. Cool. And this is very dude centric. It's all male names.
Sven's actually gender neutral.
Okay. So my first note on this episode is dumb. It just says the doctor pulls a thing out of a thing.
You are great at this.
That's what he does. He reaches into, like, some goop and pulls a goopy thing out of a goopy thing. I feel like
this is the only part of this whole ship that sells this is organic technology, because it's, like, got this weird goopiness when he pulls it out, and there's, like, seaweed almost, like, growing from it. It's, like, it's a very organic-y looking thing, but I'm, like, other than that, it just looks like there's a bunch of machinery around, so I feel like they don't sell the organic ship part.
Mm-hmm. I think they cut out the organic ship explanation anyway, because I'm like, it doesn't matter. But he does something and Ace shoots up out of the ship through the lake. She's got Excalibur, by the way. I guess we didn't say that. She's got the sword. And she just rises up through the lake, pops out as Wormsley is telling Anselin about the lady in the lake.
We were watching this and you were like, it's taking too long to get to this joke. It's taking too long to get to this joke. I want to see it.
And poor Sophie Aldred talks about the fact that the lake was super shallow, so she had to, like, kneel down to be under the water. And she's like, you don't understand, like, when you're kneeling down under the water, how hard it is to know, like, what direction is, like, perfectly up. And so, because she has to raise the sword first, so she's like, we did, like, a million takes, because the sword kept coming out in diagonals, you know, rather than, like, perfectly straight up. And so, yeah.
Honestly, in the final shot they use, it still kind of wobbles around a lot. But she comes up and then she throws the sword to Anselin and she's like, you can be King of England.
I love the lack of respect for Excalibur.
But then the doctor's still running around from this goofy snake. he's trying to get that thing. Another, maybe it's the same goopy thing, a different goopy thing. He's trying to deactivate the snake, and he can't quite reach it because he keeps getting knocked about. And then Foot stomps on it, and it's the Brigadier. He has deactivated the special effect snake.
The joy I felt from this was unreal. That's the Brig! I know him!
And they reunite, and it feels so good.
It's awesome because, like, you know, there's very few characters that, like, their show maintains, like, a touchstone with. You know, there's, in some ways, there's Sarah Jane, and then there's the Brigadier. Like, those are basically your two characters that, like, pop up from time to time. And it's nice because it's, like, it wasn't just the Pertwee era. He showed up a little bit in Tom Baker, a little bit, you know, Peter Davison, and now, you know, we have him with the Seventh Doctor. And so it's, like, he's, it does feel like an event when you have the Brigadier back.
We can't really do that anymore. That's sad.
Because he's a Cyberman now?
Yeah, because he's a Cyberman now. So Morgaine sends her men to retrieve Excalibur. There's another deleted scene I just want to mention because I thought it was very funny, where basically they cut out a lot of scenes of Ace being very annoyed with the Brig, like, because he, like, calls her, like, the new one or whatever, and she's like, you're the old one. But he offends her somehow, and she storms off, and the Brigadier's like, just saying, like, he's just not very good with women. And the Doctor's like, it's okay. You'll be shooting things soon enough.
People will be shooting at you soon enough, is what he says.
And that's where the Brigadier is comfortable. And then we cut inside the hotel where Mordred is just drinking at the bar and being really rude. Because he's talking about the owner's wife being blind, and then basically, like, he tells him, with your aspect, it is well that she is blind. Rude.
Yeah, I mean, you get the serious idea. I mean, this is another trope, right? But you get the serious idea of the guy with the mommy issues, right? Like, when a character has, like, the super powerful mom that he's always, like, with and whatever. Like, this is a guy that just, like, thinks he can do whatever he wants because his mother will take care of anything, you know, that he does that's wrong, you know, and she will let him do whatever he wants to do. So, yeah, he's that kind of guy.
There is literally scenes in this where he is basically just going, Mommy! Basically. He says mother, but it's mommy.
Right, right. Everything, he hides behind her, like, metaphorically, like, all the time. It's just like, my mother will take care of you. You know, my mother will defeat you. It's like, yeah, it's he's got problems.
My mother's on the school council.
That's true.
But the pilot, the helicopter pilot, that I guess the Brigadier just forgot about, enters the hotel and pulls a gun on Mordred. And then Morgaine enters, and the pilot shoots at her. And Morgaine catches the bullet, and then smushes it up in her hand and sprinkles the dust. Pretty cool. Then Morgaine mind controls the pilot, and, like, brings her, like, to her. She gets her on her knees and is, like, I guess reading her mind. It's very disturbing. She's screaming in pain, and she's like, shh, stop doing that. And then she just kills her. She just lets her fall to the ground dead. And then the hotel owners are like, you can't just leave her like that or whatever. And then she's like, oh, sure. And then she just turns the whole body into, like, dust.
That's her way of taking care of it. It's like, now there's no mess. Other than the fact that, you know, like, it leaves, like, scorch marks on the floor. That's not nice.
Yeah, there's, like, another scene of, like, this weird morality of Morgaine. Because she's like, oh, my son bought a lot of booze but hasn't paid for it. So let me close the tab. The way she does this is that she heals the blind woman and she's no longer blind. It's like she'll just kill this other character, but this character, she's like, oh, we gotta pay the bar tab. That's important.
Right. She's not, like, out and out evil, someone who wants to just harm others. She has, you know, like, her own morals and honor and whatnot, and it's just like, she has an objective, and she will be ruthless in achieving that objective, but she's not just, you know, harming people for fun.
Everybody sort of, like, is met back up, and then they decide to split up, leaving Anselin and Bambera to go off and star in their own romantic comedy.
Yeah, I think she says to him, are you married or what? At one point, I love that.
She says that, and then later he's like, so, art thou betrothed?
Yes. And the thing is, the actor that plays Anselin is so much like the, like, super, like, I mean, like, he's very much, like, sort of classically handsome with the long flowing hair and everything, and the way that he talks is very much that old-timey sort of romantic speech and everything, and it's just, like, he plays that so well, and I just find their whole relationship so cute, because she's very much a modern woman. You know, a modern military woman. And also, it's an interracial couple, because, you know, she's a person of color, and he's, you know, white, and, you know, and anyway, I just think that the whole thing with them is cute.
He has strong himbo energy.
But they split up, and everybody starts getting attacked on the road by these, by knights. The doctor at first is like, I don't trust this, we're not being attacked enough. And then they get attacked, and the Brig's like, you happy now? And the doctor's like, actually, yes. When Bambera and Anselin get attacked, she just pops. She has Anselin drive the vehicle.
Right. She's like, do they have cars in your world? No. Oh, just grab the wheel. And so the chassis then goes, pops the roof, gets up with a machine gun, and just starts shooting at everybody.
It's wonderful. It's delightful. And then they get back to the doctor and Brig. And Ace get back to the hotel, and the place is being evacuated, and the doctor sort of helps with the evacuation because there's some people that don't want to leave. Wormsley, I think, and somebody else.
The innkeeper.
And he sort of helps by just talking to him and convincing him to do it, but it's heavily implied that he's hypnotizing them.
Yeah. A lot of people have problems with this. I mean, and there's a moral problem with it, but, you know, he's never really hypnotized people before, but if the master can do it, why can't he, you know?
I think he has hypnotized people, but he's usually used, like, a watch or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
no,
you're right,
yeah.
Like, there's been some sort of device, but now he just can sort of just look at you and go, do what I say. So everybody evacuates, but Ace hides Xiao so that she won't be evacuated. They sort of sneak off. And then the Brigadier shows the Doctor some cool bullets that UNIT have made that, like, pierce armor, and they do all sorts of, like, stuff that will counteract, like, the bad guys they've dealt with in the past.
Right. I love this scene because, again, it's intelligent writing of, you know, we went through all these years of UNIT just being, like, completely, like, puzzled by the fact that, you know, oh no, there are aliens who aren't affected by bullets. It's like, yeah, just like the last half dozen that you fought. You know, it's like, come on, guys. Like, get with the program here. So I really like the fact that they're showing, like, yeah, like, actually UNIT's adapting. UNIT's, like, you know, creating stuff that can actually do something about these things if they attack us. So
it is just like UNIT for the solution to be better bullets. They're not gonna shoot something.
Right, but he mentions specifically that they have gold bullets for Cybermen. I mean, he says for you-know-who, but it's for the Cybermen. And then the Doctor says, do you have silver bullets? And the Brigadier's like, silver bullets? And then he asks, you know, if they actually have them, and would they cut away?
Well, there will be silver bullets eventually. So they're going to go, because, like, Bambera and Anselin didn't show up, so they're going to try to go get them, because they're just off fighting knights and flirting. The Brigadier's like, well, we need something to go get them in, and reveals Bessie!
Yay!
Which now says Who 7. That's the license plate.
Little on the nose there, guys.
I mean, this serial's been doing a lot of things very big.
But it is very nice to see Bessie again. It's another nice callback, I think.
I guess this is sort of the farewell to the UNIT era, I guess. I mean, I guess I don't assume they assumed that would be what this is, but...
No, I think it was meant more to be a passing of the torch from old UNIT to new UNIT, but we'll get to that in the last episode about why they kind of botched that a little bit.
They did. So that, but before they head off in the Bessie, the Doctor gives Ace some chalk and some instructions, and then just burns rubber on the way out of there. There's literally, like, fire on the ground, like it's the DeLorean.
Right, because, like, Ace is making fun of it, you know, and talking about, like, it goes to 0 to 60 in 10 minutes and stuff like that. And, like, you know, then the Doctor, yeah, he just, like, peels out and is just, like, dumbfounded by it.
I feel like they should have sped up the footage just a little bit more. Because it still looks like it's just barely trundling out of there.
Right, because what they do is they just put, like, a flame effect on the ground where it was, like, it was going so fast it caught the ground on fire. But even in the Pertwee era, like, the time when he did that same thing, like, put Bessie into, like, super speed, like, they sped up the footage. I mean, and so, yeah, that can look a little goofy if you don't do it right, but I still think that works better because you actually see the speed.
Yeah, instead of just, like, is smoke, that means fast. So Ace has silver bullets also, and she draws a chalk circle around her and Shao.
Yeah, because what happened is the unit people did have some silver bullets when the Brigadier asked, and she just grabbed them, basically.
And then there's a scene that I really don't like. I think this is the worst scene in that serial. I get what they're trying to do, but I don't think they should have done it.
It doesn't feel necessary.
It doesn't. I mean, the fight is fine. It's just how far the fight goes that I don't care for.
Yeah, you really puzzled me when you said you hated the racism. And I was, like, racking my head before I saw this. I was like, what's he talking? Like, I don't remember, like, anyone being, like, racist to Bombera or anything. Like, what in the world is, like... And then I watched it and I was like, oh, it's such a short, like, blink and you miss it thing that I was like... And in fact, I don't think I've ever watched it with subtitles on before. And I'm not even sure I knew what was said there. But I watched it with subtitles this time. I'm like, oh, that's what Joe's talking about. Okay.
I think that's part of what, to me, like, threw me so bad was like, whoa, we're just, okay. Are we gonna, is this gonna be like a thing? And it's like, no, it's just very quickly.
I mean, I think the point is that, like, because basically.
Ace has said something that Ace would never say.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's.
Yeah, but I still don't want to see her saying it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they sort of start bickering and fighting and saying stuff that, like they keep hearing the other person say stuff that they're not actually saying. Like, did you call me stupid? Did you call me dumb? And then they just start bickering and fighting. And then at one point, Ace just straight up says some slurs. Because Shao is obviously Asian. So she refers to the color of her skin. And it's like, whoa, hey, Ace, don't do that.
And the shape of her eyes.
Yes, that as well. So it's a double whammy there.
Yeah, it seems really weird for Ace, especially because you'll get more background stuff on Ace, where she is, like, the antithesis of a racist character. And it just, yeah, it seems like a very weird thing for her to be pushing it. Like, getting mad at each other for thinking they're saying, like, you're stupid or, you know, stuff like that. Like, that I can buy. You know, Ace is a little bit hot-tempered, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, like, the racial aspect seemed kind of out of left field.
Yeah, I think the whole point was to have her say something so out of character that, like, it snaps her out of it, because that's what that moment is of, like their reaction to it is like, whoa, what the fuck?
Right, because what's happening is Morgaine can't physically enter the chalk circle, but it's implied that she can still somehow, like affect their minds or send them illusion, you know, auditory illusion, stuff like that. And so that she's trying to provoke them to, like, fight so that they'll push each other out of the circle so then she can get the sword.
I just wish they had found another way to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's so uncomfortable. Like, having a companion say something like that. It's like, wait, there had to have been a better way.
I feel like you can have her say something mean and out of character that isn't a slur.
Yeah.
You know? But that scene's over. We don't have to talk about it or think about it ever again. So the next scene is actually really good. Because Ancelin and Mordred have found each other. They're going to fight each other. They're rushing towards each other. Oh, also this is set up because the doctor and the Brig arrive earlier. And he's like, the doctor's like, well, I'm going to go take care of this. And the Brig's like, what are you going to go do? Just run in the middle of them and shout, stop? And he's like, maybe. And then that's literally what he does.
Did we mention that there's a nuclear bomb there?
No, we have not. We said there's...
I think we've neglected the fact that, yeah, there's... So that's the thing. The doctor is worried about there being fighting there because he doesn't want, like, the nuke to be activated.
Right. I think we said missile convoy, but I don't think we said, yeah, nuclear weapon. But yeah, he runs up between, Ancelin and Mordred, who are running at each other with swords, and he just lets out this, like, booming stop.
There will be no battle here! Yeah, it's very much like the Gandalf, you shall not pass, like, kind of thing. And that's the thing. The Doctor knows that they see him as this powerful wizard. And so he's so leaning into it that it's like, yes, I'm just going to stride out in the middle of these two groups that are about to fight and just say, stop. And, you know, they'll take notice.
They do. They're like, whoa. They don't start fighting each other, so... That is a very good
scene. Great at it.
Yeah, he's very good at it.
Yeah, I do not understand the people who say that they don't like McCoy or the McCoy era, because not only is the writing so much better and more intelligent, you know, than the show has done in a long time, but he's so good because he can go from being that clown, being that fun clown, to doing, like, the drama scenes like this, and he's so good at turning like that. And I'm like, that's what you want. You want somebody who can do the whole package.
That's Sylvester McCoy, the whole package. The final scene of this episode is Morgaine is still trying to get in that little chalk bubble. She's like, I can't get in there, but then reveals something that maybe can. She has summoned the Destroyer, which is just this really cool looking blue demon. He looks like a Buffy villain. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Apparently they hired this guy, the guy who plays him, because he can sort of like puff his chest out bigger than his chest actually is. And also, he's just a tall dude.
It is a very impressive, it's one of the best looking monsters that they've had on the show up to this point.
The mouth moves pretty good, too. That's something they usually don't do very well. But when he's talking, his mouth moves.
Well, even in how they got the eyes, like, they look like it's really, like the eye, like, you don't see, like, how the mask joins very, you know, like, and, like, it doesn't seem recessed too far, anything like that. They've sort of built in, so it looks natural, and I like the whole look of it.
And then they got the thing where, like, when his mouth is open and they just, liquid is just, like, oozing down his teeth. Yeah, it's good. But the reveal of the Destroyer is the end of episode 3, and we are now into episode 4. Which I have called A Matter of Timing.
I called it Sacrificial Brig.
Sort of Sacrificial Brig. Half Sacrificial.
It just didn't take.
Yeah, your sacrifices don't always have to be fatalistic, I guess. This episode starts with the Doctor continuing to be very frightening and threatening to decapitate Mordred. He, like, grabs his sword and holds it up to his neck. And basically, like, if you don't stop, I will cut your head off. But Morgaine sort of starts mentally chatting with Mordred and is like, he's bluffing. And then so he calls his bluff. And he says the thing that the Doctor said in...
The Happiness Patrol.
Happiness Patrol, yes. He says, look me in the eyes, end my life. And the Doctor backs down.
Right. Because, yeah, I mean, the Doctor's not going to kill somebody in cold blood, and they know it. But, yeah, it is nice that he repeats the Doctor's own words back to him, you know, from another story, where he used that to keep somebody from killing somebody else.
That's a very clever piece of writing. I don't know if it was intentional. I feel like probably it was, but, like, it's good. It's good. And then the Doctor backs down, but then the Brigadier immediately shows up and puts a gun in Mordred's face and is like, try me.
I love that. The Briggs got the best lines in this episode. And yeah, like, and then Morgaine's like, whoa, beware of this guy, Mordred. He's steeped in blood.
I think she literally says, die well, and then just pieces out.
She's like, this guy's for real. Anyway, bye.
Yeah, she basically realizes that, you know, the Brig would kill Mordred, and she doesn't want Mordred to be used as leverage, so it's just like, all right, well, I guess you're gonna die.
And then she just deserts Mordred, and this is literally when he's like, mother!
Right, the Brigadier says, I'm not sure if it's there or somewhere else, the Brigadier says, just between you and me, Mordred, I'm sick of hearing about your mother. Love it.
But they don't kill him. They put Mordred in Bessie and they drive off with him. But the battle resumes with the knights and Ancelin, and Bambera gets involved. She gets a sword and starts going at it. Apparently she was pushing very hard to have a sword fight in it and was like practicing with a pin until they just gave her a sword fight.
Hey, if everyone else is having fun with swords, why not?
Right? If I had the opportunity, I would definitely. Actually, you know what? I've done I've carried a sword. When I did background acting in Sleepy Hollow, I got to carry a sword. That's pretty cool.
Did you fight anyone with it?
No, but I marched, and it felt badass. Except for the fact that I was wearing a mask that I couldn't see out of. It was like midnight, and there was fog everywhere, and there was wires and cords and like cables everywhere, and my shoes kept falling off because they were actually a little too big. So I felt badass, but also like I was desperately trying not to fall down.
Yeah, see, the whole sword thing would have made sense if they had been consistent with the armor, because in the beginning it looks like they're impervious to bullets in their armor, but then later, you know, she's dropping them when she's shooting them with machine guns and stuff. So I don't know, you know, like, are they immune to bullets? Are they not? I don't know.
Maybe these are the new bullets. I think the break says something about armor-piercing bullets. So that's probably what's going on. So yes, Morgaine can't bypass the circle, but the Destroyer could. However, he's in silver chains. So I'm not entirely certain. I guess she just brought him there as like a threat. Like, I'm going to unleash this big bad thing unless you know.
There's some implication that the Destroyer is a metaphor for the nuclear bomb. And the idea of, you know, how people use nukes as a threat, you know, without the intention of using them. It's like, oh, well, you won't dare to challenge, you know, us because we're superpowers with nuclear bombs and stuff.
Slight spoilers, I guess. But is the solution to stopping a nuke just to shoot it?
I mean, I guess if you get it early enough and you shoot, like, the part that, like, you know, the detonator part.
So, basically, there's some explosions from the hotel as the Doctor and the Brig and Mordred arrive. And in the chaos, Mordred just runs off as the Doctor runs in, worried about Ace. And Ace is basically, like, they pull her and Shao out from underneath some rubble. And then she's like, Morgaine took the sword. And, like, the Doctor's like, well, that's good. And then she's like, starts defending herself, but then she's like, wait, what did you say? And he's like, big legendary swords are easy to come by, aces are rare. And then boops her on the nose. It's very cute. And then suddenly they notice a bead curtain in front of the camera that is apparently where Morgaine sort of teleported out. And then the Doctor basically tells Ace to stay, the Brig to follow him, and then makes some joke about the key to, like, drama is the same thing as comedy, and it's a matter of timing. And then he jumps through the beaded curtain, followed by the Brigadier.
Well, actually, as he's going through it, he says, it's a matter of timing!
I love that they have to, like, twirl. They don't just walk through it. They have to, like, spin their whole bodies.
Because it's a swirly effect. So once you're in the swirly effect, you have to swirl.
It's just logic.
That's how it works.
So Ace was told not to go, but she does anyway a little bit later.
Right. She grabs the silver bullets and follows. Oh, that's right. Because, yeah, she knew that Morgaine chained the Destroyer with silver. So apparently it's Fae.
Or werewolf. She takes the scabbard and the silver bullets. And then in another moment from the Seventh Doctor era that feels like a reference to New Who, but is the other way around, she shouts, Geronimo! And dives through the beaded curtain.
I mean, that's just a thing people say, though. I think, yeah, like, what I mean, there wasn't any special thought to that. It's just some people, when they're about to do something, like, big, you know, they go, Geronimo, as they jump.
But, you know, it is also sort of like, it's hard to disconnect that from the 11th Doctor in my mind, too. So the Doctor and the Brig arrive. Like, the Doctor's like, hello, Morgaine. And as he's saying hello, the Brigadier just immediately starts shooting the Destroyer. Right.
Well, he's learned his lesson. You don't wait. You just, like, go in guns blazing.
And then the Doctor's like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, you know, couldn't hurt.
Right, worth a try.
Immediately gets chucked through the wall by the Destroyer. And then Morgaine and the Doctor sort of face off. She's got the Excalibur. He's got his umbrella.
Right, because now that she has Excalibur, she was about to open a portal back to her world and just leave.
And they basically just start, you know, talking big at each other. And then she's like, I've always beaten you at chess. Is that a clue? Is she the one who was playing chess with him?
No, she is not the one who's been playing chess with him.
I'm gonna figure this out at some point.
Yes, you will. Don't worry, you'll know when it happens.
But she says she's always beaten Merlin at chess. But the Doctor's like, I'm not playing chess, I'm playing poker. Ace pops out of the thing, knocks over Morgaine, and the Doctor catches Excalibur. He says he has an ace up his sleeve.
Nice.
And I think Ace, like, audibly groans at this. And then Morgaine says she will free the destroyer if he doesn't give her the sword back. And then he doesn't give her the sword back. And she unleashes the destroyer.
Right. Like, interestingly, he tells her, which of us do you fear more? And apparently it's the doctor, because the destroyer is the one she lets loose. she's more afraid of the doctor, so she would rather have the destroyer running around.
The doctor's like, oh, I thought she was bluffing. And then Mordred enters and, like, confronts Morgaine, like, hey, why'd you abandon me?
You abandoned your boy.
And then they disappear. They go through a portal, I guess. And then the destroyer prepares to feed. The doctor and Ace run out with the brigadier, and they sort of run off from a distance, I guess. I don't know why they run so far away, they're going to have to just run back. I guess they don't want to be caught in the crossfire while they prepare to take out the destroyer.
Right, yeah, the destroyer could just, like, start throwing them through walls or kill them or whatever, so they're getting a little bit of distance to sort of plan what they're going to do.
So the doctor's, like, loading up the gun with silver bullets, and he's like, this will take care of them. And the brigadier's like, oh, look, a spaceship! And they all turn to look, and he just karate chops the doctor. Takes the gun and runs.
Right, he says, I'm more expendable than you are, or something to that effect.
That's what he says. Here's what I believe.
Uh-huh.
I believe he was like, are you telling me that the solution to this one is bullets? There's no way in hell I'm not going to be the one to shoot it. No way in hell. He is so excited.
I've been waiting dozens of years for an alien threat that I can defeat with bullets. Not letting this pass me by.
I'm shooting this.
So he rushes in there and tells the destroyer, get off my world. And then the destroyer is like, can this world do no better than you as their champion? And he says, probably. I just do the best I can.
That's so good.
I know. I love that.
And then he just, the brig caps that mofo. shoots some bullets into his chest, and then his head explodes.
Silver will do that.
So how this was supposed to end is the brigadier dies sacrificing himself to save the world.
That was the original intention, yeah.
But John Nathan Turner had a meeting with Nicholas Courtney. They talked about it. Nicholas Courtney, you know, he said, like, hey, he's had a good run. You know, that's fine. If he goes out, you know, as a hero, I'm all for that. I'm ready. And then the writer, he, like, as he's writing it, just is like, I can't kill off the brigadier. I just can't do it.
Yeah, in the interview, he was also like, if it was now, I would definitely do it. He's like, at the time, I was just like, I can't, he's too nice, I can't kill the brig.
He was like, suddenly I'm writing his death scene, and then suddenly, he wakes up, and he goes off with the doctor and Ace, and it's like.
I think the whole point was to sort of, pass the torch from old brig to new brig, a new unit, and then he's like, I can't do that.
Well, and the problem is also, though, it wasn't written in a way to make Bombera shine. Like, we got the cute scenes with Antolin or whatever, but it isn't, like, really, like, a showcase for why she's awesome and she'll be the new Brig, you know?
But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like Bombera is pretty badass, just on her own.
She is, but it's not, like, the kind of thing usually when you'd have, like, a pass the torch, you would want to, like, showcase her a little more. Although, that is another one of the problems of this serial, is, like, there are way too many characters.
Right.
What you could have done was have Bambera saved the brigadier's life. That might have helped a little. I don't know. But yeah, the doctor goes up and he's like holding the brigadier in his arms and is like, you were supposed to die in bed. Just doing a big speech. And honestly, Nicholas Courtney, his mouth moves. Like, he's clearly not dead. But he's like, says something and then just gets up. And he's like, you don't think I would get out of there before the thing exploded? And then he's basically like, after this, I am done for real, though. I think he tells Ace, you can have him.
Right, he does.
It feels like that was sort of the climax, but we still got shit to do.
Yeah, this is also where that padding from going from 3 to 4 comes in.
And I believe part of this was not written by Ben Aronovich. It was written by Andrew Cartmell, and I don't think Ben Aronovich liked it. And then Andrew Cartmell didn't like it either, and they had to try to, like, cut it. cut it down. Specifically, a speech that the doctor gives. But Mordred and Morgaine are still here. Mordred grabs Bambera and makes her, him and Morgaine make Bambera arm the nuclear weapon.
Doesn't she take the code from her mind?
Yes, that's what they do. Then we cut to back into the, I guess, the doctor's spaceship, I guess? The organic ship.
Yeah, they're back there with the body of Arthur.
And everyone's arguing about who has earned the right to replace the sword in the ship. Like, they tell Anselin to do it, and he's like, no, it's got to be you, Brigadier. And Brigadier's like, oh, I'm too humble. And then Ace is like, give it here. And then she's like, she stabs it in. She's like, I don't care. Just get it done. The ship powers up.
The doctor says, don't you have any sense of ceremony? And she goes, no.
I love Ace. And then she stabs the sword in. The ship powers up. But Arthur doesn't. He's still pretty dead. The doctor pulls his helmet off. And inside of it is a note.
Well, there's a lot of dust that comes out. And then there's a note.
And Ace reads it, and it basically says, the king is dead, all else is propaganda.
Yeah, which makes me wonder, though. So when, you know, the future doctor, the Merlin doctor, puts Arthur there, he just shoves a note up with his head and puts the helmet on? I mean, that's... talk about disrespectful to the dead. I mean, come on, man.
Maybe there wasn't a body in it at all, and he just put some dust in there.
Just for the dramatic effect.
The whole thing is a set piece.
But the note is signed by the doctor. And it also says, like, oh, P.S. Morgaine's getting the missile. He's like, I wish I told myself this sooner. The doctor and Anselin leave to go take care of that, while the Brig and Ace stay behind to do what they do best, which is blow shit up. It's just a lot of characters bonding over blowing shit up in this one. Like, there's literally, like, they're on the beach and they watch it explode and, like, Ace is jumping up and down with joy.
Hey, Ace likes big boom.
Boom! Well, Anselin thinks that Mordred has killed Bambera. He hasn't, but he thinks that's what's happened.
Right, because she's unconscious after... I guess since Morgaine only took one thing out of her mind instead of everything, it didn't kill her. But he's just carrying her, so Anselin assumes she's dead.
And then Mordred and Anselin start fighting and sword fighting. And there's a bit where they're pushing, they've got swords together and they're right up on each other and they push off of each other. And the doctor just casually strolls between the two of them.
There's so many good bits in this one with the doctor, like, and just like the sort of comedy things. And I just, yeah, it's great.
And then the doctor goes in and basically talks Morgaine down.
Appeals to her sense of honor.
Well, yeah, I mean, because what he's talking about is, like, look, like, a nuclear war isn't, like, the kind of war you're thinking of. Like, this is what happens, you know? Like, he talks about, like, a child looks up in the sky and their eyes turn to ash and stuff like just this horrific description of what actually would happen. And the cut version, I think, is actually really, really good. I have seen the extended version of that scene where it just goes on and on and on, and it does become really tedious, but the version that they give, I think, is really powerful and works really, really well.
It does feel like weirdly tacked on here at the end. Like, I feel like it hasn't been really about this for the whole serial, and then suddenly it's all about this, you know? But it's a decent speech. It's I can see why they'd want to cut it down, because it's like, we need to wrap this thing up. Come on. But she presses the button, like, there's a countdown. There's always a countdown. She stops it at 1. You know how it goes. But then she's like, tells the doctor, like, I do want to fight Arthur, though, at some point. And then he's like, Arthur's dead and has been dead. And this makes her very sad. And she starts crying.
Yeah, so the Arthurian legend, because, I mean, there's a lot of different versions, but, like, it's really messed up. Like, Morgaine is Arthur's half-sister, but also his lover. And so, like, they sort of, like, hint at that, because she talks about being with him, like, at one point in this forest, and that the air tasted like honey, and there was, like, this sort of sexual sort of vibe she gave to it, which just kind of like, okay. And so, yeah, like, the fact that Arthur isn't there anymore, like, just, like, her will to, like, keep fighting is just gone.
He was the Anselin to her Bambera. The doctor steps back outside and stops Mordred from killing Anselin. Just, like, mind melds him. I don't know, puts his fingers on his head and makes him fall unconscious, and then tells Bambera to lock him and his mother up. Like, they got magic. How are they going to lock him up?
That is probably, like, the weakest thing about this, is that ending where it's just like, yeah, like, it doesn't seem like a resolution.
Here's what you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
They got special bullets now. So
lock him up is more like underground in a coffin.
Or maybe lock them up in a chalk circle.
There you go.
Yeah, their rules are very borrowing from a lot.
Yeah. Shh. And then because Ben Aronovich couldn't kill the Brig, we have this weird sitcom ending.
Oh, I love it.
I love it too, but it is so goofy. I do love it, but it is pretty goofy. It's the Brig and the Doctor and Anselm.
I really thinks it's doing something. And it's not, but it is cute.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's the Brig, the Doctor, and Anselin are hanging out in the Brig's garden. And then his wife, Doris, is like, I'm leaving. And then he's like, what? And they go, and it's Ace and Shao and Bambera and Doris are all getting on Bessie. And they're going to go out and have a girls' night and have some fun. And the Brigadier is all like, well, how long are you going to be? And she's like, I don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of gardening that needs to be done. And he's like, well, what about supper? And she's like, oh, yes, make sure there's supper when we get back. That'll be great.
Yeah. She specifically says, make sure you have something really great tasting when we come back.
And then he's all befuddled. And then they take off in Bessie as Doris yells, wicked! And then Anselin is like, those women are great, aren't they? And the Doctor's like, I'll cook supper.
Yeah, well, first the Brigadier tries to foist the lawn mowing off on Anselin. He's like, Anselin, any good with the lawn mower? And Anselin just looks puzzled, and the Doctor's like, I'll go cook.
And that's the end of the serial. It is cute and stuff, but it does feel a little bit like there's an episode of The West Wing that ends with all of the male characters sort of standing around looking at one of the female characters. And they're all the male characters are like, aren't we so good at our female characters on this show? Let's pat ourselves on the back for how great we are at our female characters. And it feels a little bit like that.
A little self-congratulatory.
Yeah, a little bit like, look at the good job we're doing here with our gender dynamics. And it's like, yeah, sure.
It was better till you called attention to it. Now it's...
It's also the 80s, right? Like, and so they're kind of like, I think they're trying to just say that, like, times are changing and, you know, things are changing. And, you know, yeah, the fact that Bambera is the Brigadier is already sending that message, but they just wanted to sort of have, like, a little coda on there that also was kind of like, you know, roles are changing and things are changing and it's a cute little scene, so, you know, just throw it in there. I don't mind it.
There's definitely something that happens where, like, the more distance you get from the need to point things out like that, the more, like, cringe it becomes.
Yeah.
Where it's like, and in the moment, you have to point it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the less you have to, the more awkward it becomes to point it out. And it's, you're like, wow, they sure are making a big deal about this. And that's just a weird thing about time.
I do wonder what this scene would be if they had killed the Brig.
Well, what I've heard is that it would be his funeral.
That makes sense.
That's a lot less fun.
Right.
Doris is just crying, and then she's like, all right, let's go, girls! And just bolts from Brigadier's funeral
Girl
in Bessie.
But that also would be like his remembrance ended with the funeral, too, for Mike. And it just would have felt like, man, Aronovich, you just like to have funerals at the end of your stories, don't you?
At least that would have been a funeral that I cared about the person who was dead.
Right.
But anyway, that's the end of Battlefield. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for a segment where Tony annoys me.
My favorite part.
At the 42cast, we want to bring you everything. And that's why we've jam-packed the next few months with as much as we can. You not only get the same reviews, topics, and interviews that you did before, you also get screen reads, where we compare a movie to its source material, or role models, where we talk about tabletop gaming. It's never been a more exciting time to check out our show. It's your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything, so why not check it out? We can be found on most podcasting platforms, and we are a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It's actually roughly 14 minutes past when I should have taken my meds. That's what time it is.
Interesting. So you want to speed this bit up then?
Yeah, probably. It's time for final thoughts. I don't have a tremendous amount to say just because another pretty solid episode, or serial rather. Super cute secondary characters who are fun. Like, here's the thing about the serial is that its entire goal is to have fun, and it accomplishes that goal. And it's not trying to do a whole heck of a lot besides that, and that's cool. It super accomplishes having a lot of fun, and I think the Doctor has a lot of really great dramatic moments in it, which is like especially fun for, you know, something that could be like a little bit more on the comedy side, to be like, we're just gonna let you shout a lot. Because he's so good at it. So commanding. So that's always good. It's so good to see the brick. I am glad he didn't die. I think it'd be too sad. Those are my final thoughts.
Yeah, so this is one that gets slagged off a little bit by fandom. I know Ben Aronovich himself is disappointed with it. He said that it didn't really fit, like, the story that was in his head, and I guess I'll never know, like, how, you know, what the story in his head was like. But I feel like there's a lot of really great stuff here. I mean, we already talked about how Sylvester McCoy is just bringing his A-game. Right out of the gate. Brigadier Nicholas Courtney is fantastic. You know, he gets some fantastic lines in this one, too. Like, there's so many good performances by the rest of the cast, you know, the guest cast, everybody else. Even from Mordred being super hammy to Jean Marsh being, like, super, like, terrifying as the sort of, you know, evil sorceress character. And I love that. And I love the Anselin and Bumbara stuff. And I love that Ace has a buddy in this episode. That's something that we don't see in a lot of, you know, a lot of shows where the companion gets like a friend, you know, and they hang out like real people do. It's not just like, oh, here's another female character that while we're fighting stuff, like I'm just gonna, you know, be with because we're both women. And so I like that. I liked all of those things. I like that conceptually Ben Aronovich isn't just trying to do the same thing. It was like, okay, we already did like Remembrance, where it's like, okay, like we're distinguishing this doctor and how this doctor operates, but it's like, let's turn that on its head and have like the future affecting him rather than the past and all of that. I thought that was really cool. And I love the Arthurian stuff. You know, I love like the whole idea of like sci-fi knights in armor. I've always liked the sort of sci fantasy, sort of Star Wars-y kind of, you know, sci-fi more than like super hard sci-fi. So, you know, I like that kind of thing also. And so again, it was just fun to sort of play with those kinds of tropes. So for me, it's one of the better serials. I absolutely love it. You know, I'm glad that I get to be on this episode to talk about it.
I think it's fun. I do see like it's, you know, I don't think it's like the best Sylvester McCoy episode, but it's fun. It reminded me a lot, honestly, of Silver Nemesis, and sort of like it's just kind of a romp, and it's a little structurally messy, and there is that sort of mixture of like sort of the past and future medieval stuff and the sci-fi stuff. I do think this is better written than Silver Nemesis, but it has that similar sort of vibe and tone to it of kind of like, we're just having fun here. And yeah, it's super awesome seeing the brig again. It's super awesome seeing Bessie again. I love the design of the destroyer is really cool. I do like Ace and Shao. I'll take it a step further, and they're definitely girlfriends. And I don't like the racism bit, but other than that, they're adorable. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff to be had here. I don't think there's anything that's necessarily bad happening. There's a couple of moments where you're like, I would have done that a little differently, or I would have trimmed this up a bit. The biggest problems with it could easily be solved in like some minor rewrites, mostly just tightening it up a little bit. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I always enjoy when Doctor Who is being fun. It may not be doing a whole heck of a lot, like, dramatically. I mean, there are some, like, dramatic scenes with the nuclear weapons and all that stuff. But it's mostly just fun.
Yeah, I mean, the messaging is, hey, nuclear war is bad. So, I mean, that's kind of basic as far as, like, you know, the hard-hitting messaging goes. But, you know, it works.
It's not a bad message. And I do think it's a really... I do really enjoy Bambara. And I do think it would have been interesting to see more of Bambara on the show. I assume they don't have any more unit, but...
No, but actually, funny enough, Big Finish is just starting to do... they're going to do a series of, like, units set in this era with... I think her name is Angela Bruce, coming back to be Bumbera. And so they're going to do that. Because they've already done, like, an era of, like, classic unit when Nicholas Courtney was still with us. And they had Benton and Yates and all of that. And they've done, like, New Who unit.
They haven't done any with Bumbera? That seems odd.
Well, I don't know what her career has been like. I don't know if she's just been too busy to do Big Finish. She might have turned them down when they asked the first time. It does happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, that's actually something I'd be interested in seeing more of. Let's get the new Brig. That's pretty much it. Before we go, is there anything you would like to plug?
Well, we have this other podcast called Legendary Forces that we do.
Oh yeah, I'm on that.
Right. Which, yeah, it's been kind of slow releasing, but the third episode should be out soon, so yay.
I'm excited. Listen to it. Wait, that may be the one I'm not on. Still listen to it anyway.
No, you're on it. It's we're still
okay.
It's the one where we talk about like the novelization of A New Hope and the comic adaptation.
Yeah, okay, then definitely listen to it. if you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And I want to say special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. And I also want to say special thanks again to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
And check out more of their music at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about Ghost Light, or Goose Light, with returning guest Matt Golden. Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Thanks for listening, and see you next time, and keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Bye.
There will be no battle here!
Get off my world.
Can this world do no better than you as a champion?
Probably. I just do the best I can.
Boom!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.